Listen up. We are back for another episode of the Construction Mentor Podcast. My name is Ike. I am your host. You can catch this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. You can follow me on TikTok and Instagram at The Construction Mentor. What are we here to do? We are here to promote the construction industry, what opportunities are out there, what doors are open to everybody, how to run through those doors, and then run up the ladder when you're in your career. Today, we have a unique kind of episode that I've never done before. I want to get into a little construction technology. I have Christian Reed as a guest. Super smart guy. If I were to summarize him in a nutshell, I just met him recently. And what's really interesting about what he's done in his own entrepreneurial journey is he has taken one of the simplest tools out there in construction, and he has taken a new age approach, new age perspective when it comes to data efficiency and reducing the risk of human error. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into what his career path was, what his education looked like, when he made the jump into inventing his own product and launching his own construction equipment line. So with that, Christian Reed, how are you?
Good. Doing well. Looking forward to the weekend and glad to be here today.
So when we talk about, you know, networking in the construction industry, that's how I came across Christian. We were at a industry event. We were at a trade show, right? And I had no idea who he was or what he was doing, but everybody was talking about his booth and the products that he had. And people were like, dude, his products have millions and millions of views on Instagram and YouTube, and you really got to check it out. And as soon as I walked over to his booth, I looked at what he had, and he basically revolutionized the tape measure, which was the first thing that I noticed. So we're going to get into that. We're going to show some videos of what his product is and how it works. And I really think for those of you who are already in the trade, it's going to blow your mind. You're going to find extreme value in it. And for you young people out there who are thinking about a career, you know, in education and what you want to do with your life, I think this is a different spin on how you can get into the construction industry, right? You know, there is a tremendous amount of improvement to be made when it comes to innovation, when it comes to data collection, when it comes to increasing efficiencies for people in the field. And that's what Christian has tackled here, you know, better than anybody that I have in a long time. So Christian, why don't you start by telling us, you know, what your company is?
Yeah. So Recon Tools was started 4 years ago. And to be upfront, it was really started as a side project. Myself and my co-founder both worked at a company called Form Labs, where we made desktop 3D printers, also based here in the Boston area. And for anyone who's experienced a 3D printer, I think it's a really great tool, but still limited in the potential of you need to know how to use CAD or some kind of modeling software to make something useful on it. So for us to kind of take a step back and, you know, always having this passion for how people making things, I think was really interesting to look at the construction space. The first tool I used was a circular saw and didn't really touch anything outside of woodworking until I went to college, and there was more metalworking equipment, laser cutters, 3D printers, CNC machines, whatever. But for the average person, I'm guessing a very similar progression of circular saws, playing around with a Dremel, whatever else you have lying around your basement or at your parents' disposal with it. So really interesting space to get into. And I think we went into it as thinking of it as a side project, and it really evolved pretty quickly just because of how void the space was of true innovation. There's, you know, innovation for marketing purposes of we have a tape measure that has 5 inches more of standout on it, or we have a drill that's 5% better than the competitor's drill with it. But to me, innovation are these order of magnitude changes that are fundamentally disrupting workflows or offering these order of magnitude benefits from error reduction, speed increases, or whatever else with it. So of course, like many marketing terms, innovation is frequently misused and I think overused in a lot of cases, where for us, we're always very focused on this vision and really led to where Recon is today, which is making a series of both hardware products from the most commonly seen and quantifiable one is a digital tape measure, where we're taking measurements on a tape measure, digitizing them on the screen and sharing them literally anywhere in your built environment, whether that's on your phone to a PDF that you're annotating directly into your CAD model, a series of other, I think, software and hardware solutions that really revolve around that same theme of, whereas Milwaukee and DeWalt are creating an ecosystem based around 20-volt battery platform, we're creating an ecosystem around streamlined data sharing and taking a very bottom-up approach to doing that, that our tools are all very accessible, easy to use, and whether you're using it for yourself or using it as part of a company of 100, there's a plethora of benefits that they can offer them with it. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more in the conversation today, as well as in the videos, which certainly do more justice to our products than anything I can describe here verbally.
Yeah. And I think what you'd find is that, you know, these products pay for themselves relatively quickly and the efficiencies that they pick up. So, you know, to summarize what he just said, you know, he took something as simple as a tape measure and he digitized it. He created efficiencies with it and reduced risk, and he also increased precision. And I'm sure you're thinking, how the hell do you do that with something as simple as a tape measure? You know, tape measures and rulers are something that we've been using for since the dawn of time. And there's a reason why they haven't changed much until now. So what we're going to do is we're going to walk through how he got to that point, right? How he got to that launch point, what the path to starting his own endeavor looked like. And then we're actually going to pull up some videos. But fret not if you are on audio. I'm going to make sure I narrate everything that's going on in these videos to make sure that, you know, if you're driving in your truck, you know, you're on your way to school, you're on your way to work, you have an idea of what's going on. And then, you know, we're going to share a lot of this stuff on social media because, like I said, I get excited about it and I'm sure other people would too. And I'm sure, you know, that's the results speak for themselves. He's already got millions of views and shares because of how impactful his stuff is. So, you know, with that, in high school, you know, I think you went to MIT, right? So what was high school like? What was Christian like in high school? And where'd you go from there?
Yeah, I think the evolution between schools, careers has all been very similar, where my passion has been making things. I like to make things, build things, and what I built and made has certainly changed significantly over time. But in high school, I would say it's very similar to that, that any free time I had outside of school, ran track, you know, tried to diversify the activity I was doing was how do I make something? So these were at the time really limited of the, you know, in the I guess late 2000s of 2006 through 2010 was limited by the technology at the time, which was mostly equipment that you'd find at a Home Depot. I didn't have a 3D printer, didn't have any kind of CNC technology. This was all things I was exposed to once I went to school with it. But in high school, it was doing anything. I think typically I built a shed in my backyard, skateboard ramps, things for golfing to be able to make like a mini driving range. I made a miniature golf course in my backyard. So much more so than, you know, specific to making something to do an activity I enjoyed. I really, you know, the process for me was always, you know, making the actual item with it, using different tools, exploring different mediums, and just being able to have that flexibility with it was never one for school. Despite going to MIT, I can assure you, you know, the academics were the least important thing I did at school with it. And, you know, always the hands-on, the networking and being in the field using tools was always more interesting to me and just something that evolved, you know, based on what phase of my life I was in.
So you go to MIT and you took that. Now you didn't go right into the, what I would call, I guess, the real world after MIT, right? You went into the military.
Yep. So I did ROTC in college. So that was all 4 years I was there. And ROTC, for those unfamiliar, is a way to commission officers in the U.S. military. Every major branch has both schools an opportunity to do so with it. And, you know, in addition, of course, to paying for a significant amount of tuition, it was always, you know, being, you know, patriotic duty, I think, and something that I think has diminished over the years is just being able to serve in the military and what that would mean for my, you know, overall life and career with it, that, you know, there was always a back end inevitability of going to a cool company, working on cool things. But, you know, at these companies, I can count on one hand the number of veterans I met there with it. So I think that was always something very important to me. And very quickly, I realized, you know, the military and my creativity were things that didn't necessarily align with it. But even there on deployment, when I had time off, there was plenty of, you know, time DeWalt 18 volt tools around that we're able to use to make things with. And standing outside, I remember looking, I had a temperature watch, and I think we peaked out at like 125 degrees on one Sunday when I had some time off, just working on a woodworking project with it. So definitely a burner, and really appreciate the full meaning of heat in the Middle East during the summer with it. But I think it was, again, just showing that it was hard to stifle that level of just making things. And at the time, it was anything from chairs. We made like a little bench setup outside of our, I guess, barrack type building that we were living in, myself and my platoon at the time with it. So I think it was a cool opportunity. Of course, all the, you know, leadership situations, there's definitely no shortage of interesting opportunities during deployment and during the Army training with it. So there's a cool opportunity to do at school, do after school, and then really set up for a lot of interesting follow-on and just lessons I had learned oftentimes the hard way through the military and the Army specifically.
So I, you know, first of all, obviously, thank you for your service. We appreciate that. And, you know, all the time that you spent over there, and I'm sure, you know, you're involved in other ways now supporting people. But so you weren't in combat, right? What was your role actually, you know, day to day? Was it building up bases, engineering, infrastructure, that type of thing?
Yeah, at the time, and this was basically all of 2015, there was two major things going on. Afghanistan was on the teardown and Iraq was on the buildup based on the resurgence of ISIS with it. So we were an engineering unit. We had our organic equipment include everything from D9 bulldozers to excavators, but it's basically any type of building or construction that need to happen. So that could be a berm, could be a roadway, an airfield repair, installation of whatever with it. And we were scattered across the Middle East. So we were based out of Kuwait. We had guys in Afghanistan at Bagram at the time, which was the large base there. Iraq was kind of eerie just because of how much buildup was happening that in 2011-12 is when it really peaked down. ISIS resurged. So we were going back to bases and abandoned buildings on these bases and building things back up just because of the, again, certainly quieter at the time, but more resurgence against ISIS. And there were some scattered units again in Syria, Jordan, and other going on in the Middle East with it. But our main purpose, you know, just in general, combat was minimal outside of, you know, some of the more special tiered units with it. Some certain places in Iraq were, you know, getting shelled and stuff with it, but nothing near the peak of either of the wars there with it. So most of our focus was just built on anything we could do to build up the bases, infrastructure, inspections, sometimes working with partner groups and organizations, but just everything construction in the militarized environment, which again, you know, has a lot of parallels with normal construction and a lot of the, you know, normal bureaucratic steps you can imagine happen in the military, oh, sure. Especially being in a partner country or a place we had been situated in.
Is that like something you had to declare, you had to pursue? What does that look like in the military? How do you wind up in that role?
Yeah, so I think each branch has their own version of what our engineers with it. And to be clear, the Corps of Engineers are separate enough from the U.S. military. There's overlap with them, but it's also its own. There are a lot of civilians who are in the Corps of Engineers who are running dams, bridges, and whatnot in the United States, but also having some international presence where, by definition, I commissioned as an officer and became an engineering officer. So there are many mechanisms to choose that based on selection and preference for getting it, where engineers have a wide range of missions. At the time, there was everything from road clearance, where you're going down roads, driving all the specialized equipment to find any kind of IEDs, to horizontal construction, to bridges, to, you know, I think there's even a group that runs train transportation with it. So it's a very diversified space with it, and probably one of the biggest, from ranging from combat engineers to actual construction, and was a preference we're able to do towards the end of ROTC time, and went to training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri for about 5 months at the end of 2014. And then you're a certified engineering officer, and then you go, each unit has a specialization in what to do. And I went to what's called a horizontal construction company, which is focused on earth moving activities. So we had all the, you know, cool Caterpillar equipment and all the, you know, big earth moving stuff, even if we were, you know, plenty of people, because I went to the reserves as well. So while it wound up for me being full time just because of how everything stacked up with it, it was also nice that the people in our unit work construction as their full time jobs with it. So there was unlike a lot of, I think, spaces in the military where you assume that active duty people do it full time are the best situated to do it. We had, I think, a really unique position that people were coming from working on private sector projects, whatever, and then coming into the military and then applying their craft to the trade just in a military environment. So I think that really set us up for a lot of success in the missions that we had to do and the efficiency we could do them, just because people lived and breathed construction, where there's a lot more, you know, timeline, budgetary pressure than, you know, in the military. There's other pressures, but certainly have a little bit more flexibility in that regard.
You know, it's interesting because I never thought about construction in the military until I spoke with Scott, who, you know, we were at the event with the other day, and he was on a couple episodes ago, and now you. And I think it's a great path for people, you know, and it very clearly fit your personality and the things that interest you, while also serving the dual purpose of doing your patriotic duty. So good for you. I encourage anybody to consider that. It's definitely a great thing. So you get out, you leave the military, you go to another company, you're doing 3D printing. And to be clear for everybody, I think a lot of people, when they hear 3D printing right now, they think that people are like crapping out buildings out of a printer. That wasn't what you were 3D printing, right? Or were you making 3D printers, or you were printing things for like as a manufacturer?
We were making the actual 3D printers, the materials, the software. So we had the Apple-esque ecosystem of just from start to finish. It was something under the Formlabs umbrella and mostly making plastic parts. So varying in size from, you know, as small as, you know, a couple of millimeters up to, I think, like probably 12 inches or so with it. So a variety of plastic parts and used in various manufacturing applications, prototypes, and just a higher end, great surface. I think most people are familiar with FDM printing, which is, you know, basically like a hot glue gun where I'm sticking plastic through a nozzle metal and extruding it, where we had a slightly different technology called stereolithography, which has like a vat of what feels like syrup with it and then curing a part out of it with it. So you can get a lot better surface finish and definitely at the mid called prosumer level print. We were selling printers that were maybe $3,000 versus an FDM printer. At least now you can get for a couple $100 and print out all sorts of goodies and knickknacks with it.
So then you're there and you have this idea and we're going to start showing some product here in about 2 minutes. Yeah. For those that want to start their own business that have an idea, whether it's starting their own contracting business or maybe, you know, coming out with their own innovative product like you have, how'd you do it? Did you have, you know, did you take a military check or a check from the military and, or did you take a severance package and pay for it? Did you get investors? What did starting the business look like for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, starting a business, regardless of if it's a contract business or product business, you know, boils down to two major things. One is, how do I minimize risk as much as possible, whether personally, professionally, or anywhere in between? And then two, how do I fund or subsidize that business to be able to, you know, go on and progressively build up that, even if I can't do everything on day one, there's a progression to get there. So in our case, I think it was a combination of those two things. On the side of things, I was still working a full-time job until we had, you know, been completed, raised, I think, like $1 million in pre-sales on Kickstarter at the time. So Kickstarter, for those of you not familiar, is a crowdfunding platform where you're able to take a product in development stages and offer it for pre-order for people who feel strongly about it in the return for getting the product at a discounted price at some indeterminate time in the future with it. So both of our major products we launched on crowdfunding as a way to really get the community involved with it. And again, at the time, we didn't have it manufactured. We had an idea for it. We had a what's called a looks like works like model, like it functioned as needed, it looks like, but it was made at quantity 5 instead of quantity, you know, 50,000 or whatever we made on the back end with it. So I think that was a good valid, it lowered the risk because we validated that there was a market for it, both through sales. And again, everyone came out of the woodwork once we filed a patent for the original idea at April 28th. And within 3 days, we had phone calls from every or most major tool companies asking about it. And again, we can, you know, get into that separately with it. But I think that was a big milestone there of like, we had validated the market both from industry interests as well as sales of people who are willing to put money where their mouth is and back the product with it. So I think that's where we really got excited about the concept of it. That's when we, you know, left our full-time jobs to pursue the company with it. And then the rest really go to the races with it. But, you know, to get to that point, it's pretty not very capital intensive. Like we had to incorporate the company, make a few prototypes, but that was relatively inexpensive in the grand scheme of things with it. So a
couple thousand dollars in fees.
Yeah, a couple thousand dollars. So yeah, very reasonable to get started there with it. But again, that like if you try to do everything at once, that's how you wind up in crippling debt of, you know, I want to start a contracting company. The first thing I do is buy a brand new Bobcat, buy $50,000 worth of, you know, tools or the Snap-on, you know, loop. When you do that, that's, you know, versus building up to it, like, okay, let me start with some, you know, Icon from Harbor Freight or Husky, you know, work my way up to it. And I think that progression of minimizing risk is really paramount to, you know, starting any kind of a business. And then two, for us, that as I think many contractors do, my previous career helped really subsidize a lot of the learnings in this one. Like I knew how to manufacture a product. I knew how to locate suppliers, develop it, make new technology. So that was all something I learned at my previous job, the same way a contractor who starts a plumbing business may be working as an apprentice or journeyman for a larger company. So anything you do to, you know, get those learnings and minimize the risk or progress the risk through, I think is what makes long-lasting companies is the ones that, you know, burn bright and then fade out pretty quickly because they got too over their head or are victim, especially now, of just seasonality of higher interest rates. You know, it's hard to survive the ups and downs through full cycles versus, you know, especially in 2020 through 2022, everything construction was lucrative. You can go anywhere, get work. And now it's kind of cooled off now that interest rates are whatever, 7 or 8%.
Yeah, it's funny because you mentioned interest rates and proof of concept and lowering the risk because you establish a demand in the community, right? So when I talk about risk and we have an example of a loan that all young people have to consider taking out, that being a student loan. And there's an important piece of that equation that has been removed, which is causing college to be so expensive. And that's that the bank has no risk, right? That loan will get paid by you or somebody come hell or high water, right? You can't alleviate yourself from bankruptcy. You can't walk away from it. The bank has no risk, which is why they'll let you sign up for a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt for a $40,000 starting salary, right? Which you can't afford. In this situation, when you're talking about, you know, crowdfunding or getting funding from a bank, there is a tremendous amount of risk. You need credit and you need a proof of concept and you need a proof that that there's a demand out there. And I think what Christian just laid out there, the way that they went about it, to have a light investment, and a couple thousand dollars is a big investment for a lot of people, right? But it's relatively low in the grand scheme of things when you're asking for millions and you make a couple prototypes, or, you know, you're throwing out your filing fees to start a contracting business or to buy some equipment or to rent some equipment. A lot of people rent, you know, whether it be a truck or whether it be that Bobcat or even somebody like Apple, you know, they rented their data centers until they started building them very recently, right? And that's Apple. They have a ton of money. That's just what they had to do to get it going. So I think that's very valuable feedback. Now, when we look at these tools,
and I just taking a step back, I think I'll mention as well that the progression of being debt free, I think was started with the ROTC side of things, that because I did ROTC, I didn't have to pay for college. Because I didn't have to pay for college, I entered the workforce debt free. Because I deployed, I was able to save up a bunch of money. Because I saved a bunch of money, I was able to buy a house. So all that really progressed from not getting overwhelmed with debt from the get-go. And I think, as you've mentioned on previous podcasts as well, I don't hold college in high regard. I think pat myself on the back, but MIT is world renowned, and I knew it would be on my resume forever with it. I wasn't excited at the prospect of going there for infinite knowledge. If there was a practical way to go right into the workforce, I would have much rather done that with it. So, you know, I'm glad I do that because people talk about that, but I know plenty of smart people went to MIT, plenty of people I wouldn't hire who went to school. So I think that's applied anywhere. And it's hard to, again, being out, and I'm sure you've seen it more recently too, to see that the average college price was $90,000 a year. That's outrageous, right? So I think, you know, ROTC worked out well in that case with it, but it was all a very compounding effect of what led to starting a business and having the appetite, right? It's different if you have a full family, you're in debt of like taking a plunge and like starting something, where I was, you know, fortunate to have made, sometimes by luck, sometimes by design, the right decision with it. But I think not being crushed by student loans was a big part of that. And, you know, ROTC was certainly a great mechanism to do that with it. You know, but in a lot of cases, it just isn't worth the expense of, you know, being $300,000, $400,000 in debt to come out of school with a degree that, you know, is really just a check mark on a piece of paper.
Right. You had a passion. You had a passion, and you were giving yourself the experience to go down this path, whether you had MIT or not. It's really funny that you just said that, because it just made me think of a scene in Armageddon. Have you ever seen, you've seen Armageddon, right? And they're at the table, and the British guy who also plays the evil guy in Harry Potter and the evil guy in The Patriot, he talks about how they were trying to blow up the asteroid. And if you put the firecracker on the palm of your hand, it burns your hand. But if you put it in your fist, right? And the guy, he was like, oh, well, this scientist, you know, says otherwise. And he's like, yeah, I studied at MIT with that guy, and he got a C+. He's like, you don't want to listen to that guy, right? So just because you went to school somewhere doesn't mean that you're worth your salt.
Yep, so, just a check mark.
So, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pull up YouTube. I'm going to share a screen. And like I said, everybody that's listened to this on audio, I'm going to talk through what we're looking at. Christian, I think it would be good if I stayed simple and just went with the Tomahawk, right?
Yeah.
We'll start with the Tomahawk, which is a badass name for effectively a tape measure, right? I love that. And, you know, where this is going to go, guys, is we're going to show how some of Christian's technology integrates with something like the new Apple headset, virtual reality headset that just came out, which is really what picked up on social media, whether it be YouTube or Instagram. So I'm going to pull that up, and however long this takes me to do, we will edit it out. So I may want to cut part of this out, which is fine, but I'm going to click present. Going to share a screen and boom, boom. Okay. So if you guys go onto YouTube and you click, you just type in Recon, R-E-E-K-O-N, you can see all of these videos. He has very good videos. I think all of them are under 10 minutes. Most are under 2 minutes. So what we have here is we have the Tomahawk T1 digital tape measure, again, by Recon Tools. So Christian, take it away. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, so the T1 really fit with the theme of our first product was hyper specific to a miter saw, and then, you know, the more general purpose of what can we bring and digitize to a construction site really started as the most elemental tool on a job site, which is a tape measure with it. So our goal going into this project was, how do we, you know, why digitize a tape measure in the first place? That despite, you know, seeming new, digital tape measure has been around since 1995 when Sturette commercialized the first one with it. So it leads to the question of, if they've been around so long, why haven't they gotten more adopted with it? So that led to a lot of, you know, really interesting questions and design philosophies, from the concept that before you could have a good digital tape measure, you first need to have a good normal tape measure, that, you know, Milwaukee, Stanley, everyone has perfected tape measures over the past 50, 60 years since the first power lock came out in 1963. And I think for us, making sure that we had, you know, the spring force, the durability, the tip hook, the magnet was equally important than, you know, the technology that goes into encoding the tape measure with it. So it's a really cool process. You can see behind me, for those watching on video, some of the prototypes on the wall behind me and the many, you know, probably 60 or 70 prototypes we made to get to the final version of it and then get it manufactured with it. But I think what we arrived with at the end of the day is really just a useful tool for remembering measurements and avoiding doing some of the most error-prone steps in the process, which is mental math. So it can automatically measure from the back. I can center find. I can start from zero at any position. So it's doing a lot of math functions that everyone does, but always wind up, despite, you know, anyone, how good they are at math, remembering things, always wind up where the errors happen and where really the cost comes from as well, that, you know, it only takes one piece of ASIC decking or molding that I screw up before, you know, that's $50 down the drain, $100 down the drain with it. So really, again, it doesn't eliminate them, of course. There's still, as always, a human element to it, but really our focus is on, you know, this elemental error reduction, as well as just speed increases, because I'm not wasting time writing something down, transferring a measurement, or otherwise doing a meticulous process that, you know, can be done with a single button click and have a digital copy of any measurement that you're taking.
So Christian, I'm just going to describe some of the things that we're looking at here for the listeners. So yeah. This tape measure is basically shaped like a little tomahawk, right? Like, it's not your typical circular device. It has the circle plus a handle, basically. And when you're measuring, it has a laser on it. So when you're trying to align with edges, corners, if you're trying to find the center of a pipe, you know, things that we usually have to kind of eyeball can pick that up. If you're trying to get the height of something, and you might be thinking, like, when you use a tape measure, you go from, you know, you span from side to side, and then you kind of bend the tape measure, and you're kind of using the tape measure to, like, stand itself up to get the measurement. You don't have to do that with this, number one, because of the laser, but number two, the tape measure has the capability of accounting for its own size in that measurement. So, like, if you went for, we just looked at, you know, you're measuring an opening, and you don't have to bend the tape measure, because you can click a button and it can account for the size of the actual unit itself, right? And as you pull this along, you're following the laser to the center of studs, to the center of pipes, and it has a digital interface that you're basically clicking, which is accurate to the 32nd of an inch, heavy or light, and it's basically recording that for you. How many times have you measured something and then you're like, oh, wait a minute, was that 3/4 or was that 5/8? How confident am I in my eye and the angle that I was at as my head is, you know, twisted around, or I'm rushing around to do something? You know, this is capturing all that for you. And how is it capturing it? You're seeing in the video that it's actually recording on your phone. And if you have plans on your phone, it can go right there, right? So did I miss anything there, Christian? I feel like I just described everything that we got right here. But like I said, this thing is badass.
Yeah, that covers it all. Like, and, you know, the best way, of course, is even if you're listening on audio, is to watch a video of it, that it very, very quickly describes what it is, watching a single video of it. So, you know, well across mm-hmm. social media, online, all roads lead to a recon when searching digital tape measures. And that's probably the best way to really encapsulate and solidify if you haven't already seen it, just because of the amount of videos and content we put out on a regular basis.
Awesome. So what would be the next video? I think for me, it would be the M1 caliber demonstration. So another measuring device, but an accessory to a circular saw that you'd be basically running a bunch of cuts on. Is that a good one to go to next?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know,
the top go up a little bit.
M1 accuracy.
The accuracy one's probably, it's just a newer one. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, beautiful. Okay. So right here, again, what we're looking at is another product that they have. This is the M1 caliber, again, a recon tool. And you're looking at an accessory that would basically go on a chop saw, right? So what does this look like? This isn't a tape measure, like a traditional tape measure. This is actually an accessory that basically has a rolly device. And as you're rolling, you know, whether it be studs or, you know, maybe it's pipe, whatever it may be, it's actually taking the measurement. So again, Christian, why don't you walk through what we're looking at here?
Yeah, so the M1 was our first product, and really along the themes of how do you take something everyone already has, which is a miter saw, and add digital capability to it. Like, there's always the inevitable of, oh, imagine if this were all integrated, and maybe in the future there will be integrated versions of it. But the idea is people buy a miter saw, people buy a table saw, and likely have it for 5 to 10 years. It's a pretty expensive and capital intensive piece of equipment with it. So the M1 is, you know, an augmented tool that, you know, clamps onto a miter saw fence, and very similar if you ever use a surveying wheel that you roll along and it shows you the measurement of how far you rolled with it. And we just made a simplified and smaller version of that to go onto a miter saw with it. So really optimized for speed. And this was, you know, one of the initial ideas we had, which evolved into what Recon is today with it. And very simple what it does. It clamps onto a fence. So most miter saw fences have at least 4 or 5 inch tall fence backs with it. This clamps onto the back of it. An arm drops down with a wheel on it, and it measures as you slide material underneath it. So the same way that you might imagine me measuring a landscaping with a measuring wheel with a handle on it, this works in a more self-contained form factor with it. And really the advantage of this is just speed, that I'm not stopping in between cuts. The zeroing process works by touching off on the saw blade, that the action of zeroing it accounts for the blade width on it, and then just make my cut. So if I wanted to cut something to be 5 inches, I'd slide the piece of material to the right or left until I hit 5.5 inches on the screen, make the cut, re-zero it, and go on to my next cut. So it's really optimized for speed and, you know, really just reducing the amount of time I need to stop, take out my tape measure, take out my square, make the next cut with it. So found a lot of interesting uses for it. Definitely a simpler product. There's nothing crazy on the technology side of it, but I think set the idea that you could have these digital tools that existed around your job site and just take out one of the either error-prone steps in the process, or on most job sites, at least we visit, usually have one of the least experienced people who's, you know, the cut guy or the person who's running the miter saw, chop box, whatever with it. So having a way to reduce the amount of errors or their dependence on being able to count fractional lines correctly is certainly something that the can help compensate and deliver on.
And again, he's going back and forth on this between inches and standard and metric, right? Inches and millimeters. Now I want you to picture a situation, because I've been in this situation where you're the cut guy that he just said, right? So guy's out in the field and he's doing layout or he's taking measurements, and then he's either writing it down or he's yelling it down from the roof or whatever other level down to a guy who's on the saw doing the cuts. Well, what if he's using the tomahawk, taking those measurements, and then that measurement's showing up on the phone for the guy down at the saw? And instead of loading up another piece of wood or a piece of base or whatever it may be, and then taking out your tape measure and then marking it and then getting out of the way and then adjusting it a couple times to get it completely perfect, and then you don't really know if you're, you know, heavy or light, you can just basically load this up. And if you're looking for something 48 inches, it's boom, push it on, roll it, 48, boom. Put another one on, roll it, 48, boom. Think about that process that we just talked about over time, over the course of a day. If taking out your tape measure one time takes 30 seconds and you have 100 cuts in a day, you're saving minutes and hours, right? So when we talk about these things paying for themselves, it's like a no-brainer. These things pay for themselves within the first day that you use them, right? So now, does this integrate in any way with the Tomahawk or with the app? Or is it really just you reference those other pieces for the measurement that you want, and then you roll it until you see the measurement on the digital interface on the M1?
Yeah, this was before we had the app infrastructure built out, so there's no direct connection. But the way we see most people use it is have a phone or tablet mounted next to it, which is showing their cut list in real time, the photo annotation, whatever, and then using the M1 to actually execute the cut with it, and then go back to the Rock app to mark it as complete in the process.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Anybody who's ever lived in that, I mean, even if you do some DIY stuff at home, it's immensely powerful, right? You know, the next thing that I would look at before we get into the Apple headset would be the label maker, the P1L Tagger construction printer. Is this a good video here?
Yeah.
So again, guys, we're making labels for everything that we do on site. But go ahead, Christian, why don't you talk us through this one, what we're looking at?
Yeah, the P1L was our third product in the ecosystem and really addressed the pain point that with the tape measure, with our mobile app, with the M1, you had a fully digital workflow. You weren't taking out pencils, you weren't executing what traditionally are the error-prone steps in the process, which result in a piece of material being too short to the wrong location with it, and realized that the quote unquote analog step in the process was still, I was taking out my marker after cutting it and labeling it on there, which when I send someone a pile of materials up the job site, up on the roof, the second floor, I'm spending some time twisting around the 2x4, seeing where they wrote it, trying to see if they wrote a 7 or a 3, depending on their handwriting with it. And realized a really simple way was just to have a label printer in the process, where the overhead is so easy that because the measurements are already in the app that you capture from the tape measure, it's literally just you click complete and you click print and you have a label generated. You're not typing anything in, you're not adding any additional steps to the process. So found it really resonate there, from everything from labeling materials, if I'm integrating and using a construction management software, labeling issues on the job site, punch list items. So it's a very flexible system. It can link to any web address. It has printed text on it, QR code. So we found it to be a really flexible tool just to help, again, further bridge this gap between on the enterprise commercial side of things, digital and physical world, and for the residential side of things, just taking a lot of steps that I'm doing manually and integrated into the workflow that people have come to expect from the M1 and the T1 digital tape measure.
So again, this is the P1L. It's a label maker. And what you're looking at is you're looking at this little, you know, label maker that's no bigger than your hand, and it's spitting out a label with a QR code. What do we mean by QR code? Those are like those fuzzy looking square patterns that we see on things that we can then hold our phone up to. And then, you know, maybe a link comes up or something like that. And it's not just for cuts, but like Christian said, if you had a pile of lumber that came out to a job, you could label every single piece for the length that you actually cut it and not have to go find it. You could then also scan the QR code and see where it needs to go on a job. You can do punch list items, right? If you have a punch list item, a certain spot somewhere on the drawing that you want people to be able to reference and communicate from there, then you can use the QR code that way. You know, he's also showing things that are labeled like panels for you electricians, voltages for a certain conduit that's laid out on walls, which again, all connects back to the drawings on an app. So this is, again, efficiency and communication. It's saving time trying to find information in the field, and it's connecting it to all of your construction documents that you're referencing when you're on site. So we just went through three tools that are extremely impactful. And what Christian is addressing here, again, are things that are so simple that I think have been overlooked for people in the construction industry. You know, these, I don't know if rudimentary is the right tool, but the right word, but you know, these simple
elemental tools, I think is how, yeah, very ooh, elemental.
There you go. There you go. Elemental tools that we use day to day. And just looking at it in the simplicity of it, we overlook it as an opportunity to innovate and become more efficient, because like you just look at a tape measure and it's like, yeah, that tells you what a foot is. Like what more do you need? Right. So this is groundbreaking stuff. Now, where we really get new age, and like I've already mentioned at least twice, is the headset. So Apple just came out with this headset, and what they've done is they have basically integrated these tools with that headset. So there is a video, if you go look at it on their YouTube page, you type in Recon Tools, it'll come right up. You scroll down and you can't see his eyes, but you can see Christian's beautiful smile. And it says Apple Vision Pro Construction. You can't miss it. So we're going to click on that. And I believe this has a few million views on Instagram. But Christian, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, the Apple Vision Pro, I think, is really the closest look many of us to get to what the future of construction is. And I'll caveat this, as I do anytime I talk about the Vision Pro, is it's not practical right now. There are a lot of limitations to it. You're not going to see it on job sites tomorrow, but very rarely do you have opportunities to see completely new mediums. And I think seeing the Apple Vision Pro, that A, it does everything you see in the video is real. There's nothing simulated in it, but the idea of not having to carry your phone around and have blueprints, drawings, dimensions that follow around with you and are really just augmenting the human. Like we talk a lot about robots replacing humans, but even in the future scenario that we envision, it's augmenting. How do you give humans more capability than they have now? How do you remove the meticulous, backbreaking tasks that humans are doing with it versus there's going to be a humanoid robot that's just going to do everything that humans do now with it is not really our vision of what the, you know, construction of the future. It's really augmenting human tasks and giving them more capabilities. And I think the Vision Pro as a really well put together technology marvel that Apple put together is really a sneak peek of what that looks like. And again, a very practical workflow where I'm taking measurements somewhere on the job site, I'm seeing them populate in real time, I'm using the M1 to cut my measurements, the P1L label printer to print a label out for it, and then sending the materials up. Instead of, you know, having my phone in my pocket and using two hands, I have two hands free. So this is increasing safety. And yeah, just really a cool vision of what this, you know, future can look like as we go forward with things.
So I'm going to hit to bring this back to the beginning, but what we're looking at is, you know, he takes it out of the toolbox and he's got a framed wall in front of him. He puts his hard hat on, right? Obviously we have to fit this on with a hard hat, and he has a digital interface that's in front of him. And as Christian mentioned, this is no hands. So imagine walking around a job site and having both of your hands free to use, whether it be for the tomahawk tape measure or to have, you know, a piece of material in one hand or the other, or be evaluating whatever you're looking at, instead of carrying around that cutlass or carrying around a sheet of plans, you have this interface up in your line of vision and you can move it out of the way to work on whatever you're working on. And it's just, it's super cool. You have to look at this if you're looking on audio. I'm going to post part of this video so you guys can see it, but he's walked up to the framed wall, and there's a framed opening in it. And he just took the width and the height of it. And as he's taking it, he clicks a button, and right on the interface, right in his line of vision on the Apple Pro, there's measurements popping up on a screen. And as we said before, then he walks up to a saw and he's looking at the saw, and he's got the M1 wheel on there, and he has his cutlass right in front of him, and he doesn't even have to reference anything else. All of the cuts that he needs to do are listed out in front of him. And he's just looking up 18 inches and 15 sixteenths, or 18 and 15 sixteenths of an inch. Boom. He looks down, he rolls it on that M1. He makes the cut. He can go to the next cut. And he's got, I don't know what's on there, 20 measurements right there that he doesn't even have to look around or reference a sheet or pull out a tape measure at all. I mean, this is taking seconds. It's almost like that movie Office Space where, you know, they come up with a scam to take a penny from, or a fraction of a penny from every transaction, and they figure out how to steal millions of dollars from the company. Like, you are taking fractions of seconds and handfuls of seconds at a time. And over the course of days, weeks, months, we're talking about thousands of man hours that are going to be saved just by using technology like this. It's absolutely incredible what you've done.
Yeah. Again, it's a cool, really. Again, anyone's ever in Boston, they're more than welcome to come try it out in person with it. But it really is just a really cool look into the future. And again, yeah, everyone's rightfully so pointing out the impracticality of it right now. But the same thing could be said about almost any piece of technology ever, that the first version of it does not have all the issues solved with it. But when it is, it's inarguable. And I think that's reflected in the comments of, you know, social media always brings out the best of both sides of any kind of argument with it. But seeing the comments that, A, how much it resonated with people, that even outside of very technology savvy circles, we had a lot of people just reference this, talk about it. So it started a really interesting discussion, a very thought provoking discussion. And I think that's, you know, both reflected in a number of comments on it, but both on, I think, people understanding that, hey, you know, right now this has X, Y, and Z drawbacks, but when it does become the cost or size of safety glasses, this is going to be a really useful tool for us. So I think it's nice when a piece of technology can just self-describe itself as what it's done, and really, you know, the parallel in the AI space when ChatGPT came out, is very easy for the average person to understand that you can ask it a question and it'll give you a human-like answer with it. That, you know, this is the first example of AR really showing that, and what this future vision looks like when we solve and iron out all the intricacies and edge cases for whatever spatial computing or augmented or virtual reality with it.
So there's two other really simple tools with this before we start talking about some numbers that I want to look at, because I think durability comes up as a question, right? And throughout all these videos, for those of you on audio, what you're looking at is you're looking at them beating up this tape, right? The blade of the tape, very durable. People are walking on it. You know, it's not cracking. It's there. But if you were to have to replace it, because we're talking about this Fat Max that I have right here that is short money at a Home Depot or something like that, right? Like, you don't want to have to replace this all of the time. So what's durability look like? And where can I find, Christian, where can I find a video of you replacing
the blade? Just search T1 blade replacement. I don't know if it's on this page or not.
Recon.
Just search blade. I think it should come up pretty quickly. Yeah.
Blade replacement. Okay. So durability. Again, super easy to replace the blade on this. You have a video up on the screen right now where Christian, you know, all he has in front of him is a screwdriver and a new blade to put in. So Christian, walk me through what we're looking at you do here.
Yeah. So blade replacements were a big thing up until the 90s when tape measures became more commoditized. And we have several, any chance we get on eBay to buy historical tools of, you know, vintage tools. I think we take the opportunity and have several still packaged ones of Stanley at the time for a power lock tape measure. You just swap out the reel and lead with it if it got damaged. And I think like many things, it became so commoditized and, you know, inexpensive to make that you just now throw away the whole, when you break, you step on a tape measure blade, can't get, you throw it away with it. So obviously that's not an acceptable answer when a tape measure costs 10 times as much as a normal tape measure at $250 with it. So we were very keen on not only making the tape measure blade, but almost every aspect of the tape measure placeable with it. So serviceable in the field. And you can see here, for those of us watching the video, all I do is remove two Phillips head screws from the bottom. I disassemble the reader module, which is what's actually encoding the tape measure, by sliding a couple parts forward and removing a snap fit on it. And then it's really straightforward from there. I take out the full tape measure blade, the spring locks into place once I hit the 25 foot plus mark. I take off the old blade, put in the new blade, put it back in, and I'm up and running instantly with it. So I think that was very, you know, out of necessity of what we need to do for a digital tape measure. And also even in a more general sense of just, you know, not one to preach, you know, everything needs to be recycled, but it is kind of a wasteful process of just because one little part of the tape measure blade breaks, I'm throwing away the plastic housing, the 25 foot spring on the inside, the bell clip with it, and just then forcing you to go back to Home Depot, Lowe's, whatever, to get a new tape replacement, full tape measure replacement, versus just having to be able to swap out the blade and be back in business in 2 minutes with it. So, you know, very proud of how, you know, the simplicity of how this came out and just the concept as well of being able to replace a tape blade without, you know, throwing away the whole thing if something gets damaged or broken on it.
Right. So we're looking at the video now and he's done everything that he just said. And if it, you know, really, really easy, you basically pull the tape all the way out. You can see that it's at the end. It has a name basically telling you that it's at the end, or not a name, but it has a, you know, a visual piece that shows you that it's at the end. I mean, you can just very easily see how to replace this thing. I mean, you basically, you know, you twist it around, you take it off, you put the other one on, it goes right back in, and then you snap everything else on that he just had. I mean, we've been watching this video for not even 3 minutes, and he's going slower than he would have to in real life because he's talking through it in the video, but it's a very, very quick replacement. Now, with the app, so the next thing that we're looking at is the app, right? So all of this, you know, data and digitization and everything has to go to an app. So we're going to walk through that. Now, as I understand it, Christian, all of the tools, the M1, the P1, the Tomahawk, they all have their own name, right?
Yes.
Name as in almost like an IP address or like your Wi-Fi when you go to, you know, connect to your Wi-Fi or something like that.
Yeah, we have a fun thing we actually took from our previous company that, in addition to, you know, being named what the product is, the serial naming convention is not 729QRT. We use a unique combination of a human first name and an animal last name with it. So a serial name, and everyone can see this who owns a Recon product, that the serial name for the T1 might be T1-Roger Rabbit or Stephen Fish or Chris Horse or something with it. So it's very easy to identify them, and just, you know, giving a little bit more flavor to, you know, serializing. If someone has a customer support issue, warranty claim, it's very easy. And we have, you know, millions of unique combinations between those two categories of naming conventions.
Which means what? You can tell who's taking a measurement, when they're taking a measurement. And that's all part of, you know, data and everything that we're trying to collect too. So when you log onto the app, we're looking at it here. Do you need me to go back to the beginning to talk through any of this, or could you start
About what we're looking at? Yeah, the Rock app is, you know, a free, so completely 100% free. There are some enterprise level features which have costs, but nothing out of the box as any price or ever will have any cost associated with it. And it's really just replacing what everyone is doing now, which, instead of using a, you know, construction calculator from 1980, you have a very visual friendly interface that, because you have all your measurements already, you can directly drop them over a photo annotation. I'm, you know, reframing something and I take a photo, I put the measurements directly over it. I have a construction calculator for calculating a stringer length, a riser, whatever else on my staircase.
So Christian, I just want to point out two things that you just said. Number one, the basic function of this app is free. There is no cost to it. Number two is that, you know, you can take pictures and you can overlay, you can actually take a picture of what you're looking at and overlay the measurement that you're taking so that it's easier to keep track of, right? How often do we have pictures that we take of something and then we try to add it to a list or a punch list or a to-do list for somebody, and there's a little ambiguity of like where it is in the job. or anything like that, right? And then that's where you get to then, you know, use the stickers and all those things. And most importantly, for those of you who are not good at math, because so many people complain to me that they feel like they don't have a role in the construction industry because they're not good at math, there's a calculator right here, right? So all the measurements that you're taking, there is a measurement, there's a calculator where you can add all of these things together and you don't have to deal with the fractions yourself.
Yep. So everything is done. And just, again, replacing what everyone is already doing on their iPhone calculator, sending a photo over a text message and just doing it in a way that's optimized for construction. Like as you seen for those of watching the video, entering a fractional number is not a normal number pad and typing in three different variables. It's a fractional keyboard that's optimized for fractional entry with it. So I think this level of detail and subtlety we go to really represents our, you know, just overall thinking that we've gone to incredible depths to make this useful for everyone. And B, it's all done in-house with it. So we have an active forum, people make suggestions, and a month later it's implemented in the app with it. So we try to keep a really close relationship with the, you know, thousands of people who are using our app on a regular basis that we don't claim to have nailed everything on day one, but we absolutely stand behind what we make. And if we don't have it, we'll work on a way to get it implemented in a practical way into the app.
Christian, I have to ask you, because I just saw it. Talk to me about the image that we're looking at now. So I'm looking at what looks like pipe runs and conduit runs. I'm guessing it's conduit because of the image that I see of what looks like a conduit bender.
Yeah.
Well, speak to me about this. Well, how does this apply for electricians or pipe fitters specifically?
Yeah. And one of the functions in the app is we have 50 and more added on a weekly basis, construction calculators built into it. So we have very visual friendly interfaces. One, they could all be custom. So we do expose the way to custom build these, as you know, maybe people have their own calculators that they want to make with it, but we have about 50 pre-built construction calculators that, you know, there are various apps that do one off for, you know, hyper specific to plumbing, to framing, to finished carpentry, whatever. And what we're looking at here is a conduit bending utility where I'm entering the input values of this is a 4-point saddle bend where I'm trying to avoid an obstacle in one of my conduit bends with it. And rather than, again, the experienced people, sure, you can eyeball this and estimate it, but this just gives you a more, you know, practical and math driven way to make sure that the bend is exactly, you're not wasting, you know, conduits pretty EMT can, you know, add up pretty quickly depending on, you know, the thickness and size you're using of it. So just another tool we have for users to, in a very visual interface, see a diagram of what I'm trying to bend and then taking measurements I'm directly entering from my T1 Tomahawk or otherwise entering where I can specify the angles and then have an output of exactly where I need to bend, what side or what arrow I'm aligning to on the conduit bender to make sure you get output. And again, this functionality certainly exists in various apps already. There are very good apps that do this, but having this all on the same platform that I have all my measurements in it, I can save the utility, I can share them with it, I can label them with the printer, just shows this ecosystem level thinking versus, you know, solving one problem and having to import and export things between apps, paper, and other ways where usually most of the errors come from in construction.
Listen, I'm going to, you know, play this a couple times here because I want people to really see this. But for those on audio, what we're looking at is we're looking at on the phone, zooming in on a plan, and you can see what would be a column or a pile. And you have a pipe that is straight, and then it goes at like a 45, and then it runs past the pile, and then another 45 to go back in line where it was at the beginning. And then as they're typing in measurements at the bottom, it shows that straight line, like almost if you took a string and you laid out that string and then you made the string go around a cup on a table and then straightened it out again. But then you pulled that string tight and made it a straight line. Or if you took a circle and you undid the, you know, the perimeter and you made that a straight line, then what you're looking at is you're looking at the exact spots that you need a bend in that straight piece of conduit. So if you have a 10-foot stick of pipe or a stick of conduit and you need a bend on the second foot and then another one on the fourth foot and another one at the sixth foot and another one at the eighth foot to get around that column, it's actually showing you that layout on this app. And again, it's all from the tool that's in your hand, which could be connected to, you know, a tool on your eyes. And ultimately, what does this do? This saves time and somebody going to figure this out. It's same. And what it really does, the most important thing is that it saves time from somebody doing it twice, because I think we all hate having to do things twice, right? So again, incredibly, incredibly powerful function that they've come up with here. With, you know, with that, Christian, am I missing anything else from the YouTube channel that you think would be valuable to show?
No, I think that's a pretty good overview, and hopefully to you know, summarize and highlight from there, that everything is very easy to use. You don't need everything for it to work. Everything you saw that we talked about works individually as well. You can use the app without our products. You can use our products without the app with it. So everything works independently, and it's very conducive to scaling up as you need the functionality with it. And we find a lot of customers say, hey, you know, let me try a digital tape measure, see how it works. And then all pathways usually lead to the same spot. It's like, wait, so it's digital. So if I'm on the roof, that means I could have my guy on the cut saw on the other side of the job site and see the measurements in real time with it. And then we have a very conducive and easy to go workflow to scale up with it. There's not a huge upfront investment that to try this out, you need to spend tens of thousands of dollars. You can pick one up for, you know, $250 on Amazon, try it out, and then see the functionality, try the free app out with it, and then really scale up to tailor to your use case with it. So I think that's definitely something that we work very hard on to make sure it works in that way. And that hopefully, you know, through these videos, just show that, you know, just scratching the surface of what you can possibly do with them, and where this, you know, real savings come from, just the error reduction and just the speed that you're increasing by not doing these things. As I think you pointed out, Ike, of, you know, these things that take 10 to 30 seconds very quickly add up to minutes and very quickly to hours on a weekly basis with it. So, you know, with everything being expensive and labor being shortage, that these are, you know, very easy to implement, quantifiable ways to get these huge backend savings without, you know, reinventing the way you work or the equipment you have to operate on with it. So definitely, yeah, preview of, you know, what's to come and really showing the, you know, current ecosystem as we have it built.
Yeah, I think, you know, the investment, $250, I think that this thing pays for itself within a day or two. You know, in a lot, the more people that I talk to in their business, when they talk about scale, a lot of people, because of the labor shortage and because of just all the nuances that come to growing a business, I hear less people wanting to add volume. They want to keep what they're doing, maybe grow volume a little bit, but really increase efficiency and profit margin that way. You know, Kevin from Raven Builders, obviously, you know, we both know him, and I know that he has these tools. You know, this is one of the ways that he's picking up efficiency to take a 3-man crew and make more money on his $2 to $3 million revenue stream that he's making a year instead of going to a $4 and $5 million revenue stream. So it's these types of things. That's the way to do that. And again, I get an electrician that I'm going to see later today. He's going to swing by my house as long as my wife doesn't go into labor. He's the same thing. He's got a 2-man crew in him, and he doesn't want anything more than that. So for those of you who are out there and you're on your own crews, or if you're on a big business, you know, if you're on a big business and you have 10, 20, 30 guys, extrapolate that across 10, 20, 30 guys, you're getting to thousands of hours of savings much faster than the smaller contractor. So profound impact. I'm excited to see where this goes. Christian, for people that have been buying this now, what are you seeing for sales? How have sales been?
Yeah, we can't keep the T1 in stock. So hopefully that's some indication of, yes, poor planning on our side, but, you know, practicality. We're a self-funded company, so we've never taken external funding. So it's certainly back to the business side of things. Like any contractor, we're very, you know, subjective to just cash flow to be able to scale the business. So that doesn't mean we're not operating aggressively as a startup, just without having, you know, X amount of money in the bank that's quote unquote obligation free or giving up equity to get part of that with it. So yeah, they're selling faster than we can make them with it. And these are, you know, good and frustrating problems to have with it. I'm really just showing the vastness of the market. Like, people are getting it, and there's no, the most exciting thing for me to see every day is, I have your T1 Tomahawk. How do I do this? Or can I do this with it? And I just think seeing the vastness of the applications, and that usually leads to not something I'm doing on the product, but using one of our parallel products with it, whether that's the app most commonly just because of the flexibility offered by software. But I think that's definitely one of the most exciting aspects of it, of getting the equivalent of a drill or driver in a 20 volt battery ecosystem, being like, hey, do you have a PEX expander? Hey, do you have a compressor, whatever, with it, that this is our, the tape measure being the most universal tool is the hook. And then you start to explore the outside possibilities, which are very trade specific, right? A different need for a plumber than it would be for whatever, you know, other landscaper or whatever other trade specific.
One of the bigger objections that people have with adopting any kind of new technology, I think it's 35% of people. And I think probably in our industry, especially with a lot of the, what I would call cavemen out there, that it's probably higher than 35% is support. So what's the support like with Recon? Do they get a hold of you? Do you have like a call center? What's the software support like?
Yeah, I think people are surprised to find out we're based in Boston, right? We stand behind our products. We're, you know, as CEO, I do a lot of things, but I'm definitely looking at support tickets every day. But any ticket sent to us over our email, contact@recon.tools, is answered within 24 hours. So we stand behind our products. We've been around for 4 years, and we know that our Evolution is not being faceless, nameless company who's making products and coming out the door. You know, we're all local to the, we're based in Boston. We invite anyone, and I've had many people say, hey, I'm skeptical about this. Say, hey, come invite us to your job site or come to the office and you can, you know, beat the shit out of the products here, right? Like we, there's nothing we're hiding.
Yeah.
Things we sell on Amazon, which is self-filtering just because anyone can post a review on there, even if they're, you know, competitors trying to leave us a bad review. Like we're very transparent about what we're doing and not trying to hide behind what's going on. And, you know, certainly it's hard to express that to people, but people who meet us, we don't try to hide. And I'm a very practical person of knowing what our limitations are now. That the internal joke we have for the tape measure is that it's 10 times expensive and 2 times as big as any tape measure ever made with it. And that's just a reality of where we are right now. Like a cell phone, it will become cheaper and smaller over time with it as we figure out and refine it and there's work for us to do with it. So on the support side, we stand behind our products. We take feedback to heart. We look at every video. We engage with customers. And, you know, there's trolling where, you know, there's no engagement with. And then there's people who have a constructive criticism and we're able to work through. And, you know, I've already started to see that if people suggest something and then 2 months later find out it's solved through a firmware update or through a new app release with it. So we really stand behind our products and we have both dedicated people who are, you know, supporting more general purpose inquiries, as well as our engineering team who is never more than a layer removed from issues that we're seeing in the field to make sure they're solved on either the manufacturing side or just swap out. Like again, where we stand behind our products and more often than not, we'll swap out complete units, even if it's a user fault for, hey, I dropped my tape measure off a 3-story building onto concrete, it broke. Like you guys have a terrible tape measure. We'll more often than not replace that, even though yes, it's not covered under warranty with it, because we stand behind our products and are trying to invoke this change and, you know, trying to be flexible about how we do that before it becomes a faceless, you know, buying something through a retailer and going through a convoluted warranty claim process with it. So while yes, and not advertising and hopefully don't regret seeing this, I would say it's much closer to we guarantee our products much more so than a warranty with them, even if it is a deliberate or user problem with it, just to build this initial foundation. And hopefully, you know, we appreciate the community we're building as we grow and evolve over time.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome stuff. I love what you're doing to the industry. I love the efficiency that you're bringing. This aligns with something that I'm working on in my own personal and professional career when it comes to creating efficiencies in the industry. And I'd love to see that merge at some point. We've talked about that. And I haven't talked about that technology on the podcast yet, but I will very, very soon. Christian, do you have anything else for the audience that you'd like to mention?
No, just that, again, I appreciate everyone who's tuned in to listen to this and really just emphasizing again that, you know, Recon is a, you know, technology driven and, you know, customer centric company with it. So, you know, we have a big social media presence, which of course brings out the best of worst in people between comments and things, but we are real people. We're a 15 person entirely based in Boston company with it. We have a variety of people from all sorts of backgrounds. We're very much rooted in the practicality of construction more so. We work on cool technology, but we're on job sites at least once a week, if not more often, to make sure that they actually match with expectations. And hopefully that's something that resonates with people, that this isn't a startup play or someone coming from private equity seeing an opportunity in construction. Like we are purists in the sense of how people make things. I spend more time at Home Depot than I do at, you know, any other store with it. You know, we're rooted in the practicalities of construction, and hopefully that's something that people, you know, feel approachable about that. You know, my email address, I'm sure we'll put it, you know, anyone's free to reach out to me. I spend a lot of my time on a weekly basis talking to customers, talking to people I can help mentor, and just really rooted in the trades of that, of how do we take these elements of construction and combine them with all the advancements in technology and really bring them together to products that are delivering value to people and helping, you know, everyone with their, you know, everyone has challenges, whether running a contracting company, working at a large GC with it. And hopefully we just make that process a little bit more easy and, you know, continue to evolve our roadmap to cover the wide range of use cases people undertake in construction.
Beautiful, beautiful. So again, you can find them at Recon. What's the Instagram handle, Christian?
Recon Tools everywhere. If you search Recon Tools on any platform everywhere, you'll very likely be drawn to our.
There you go. Recon Tools anywhere. I follow them on YouTube, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Go check them out. Again, this is the Construction Mentor Podcast. You know why we're here. We want to bring value to people. And I think that this new technology, where it's headed, is going to bring a tremendous value to a lot of people. So continue to follow this podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can follow me on TikTok and Instagram at The Construction Mentor. And I'll catch you guys next time. Thanks, everybody.